dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to the Frank Gaffney Show. Our Secure Freedom Radio brings you a great program today involving Carolyn Glick, our duty expert on the Middle East, reporting in from Israel, a locus of so much trouble, and more to come, I fear. Deborah Burlingame will be joining us in our second segment today. She will be talking with us about the problems on the home front, specifically the views of a 9/11 family member about the challenges that we're facing on the home front from the Muslim Brotherhood and their sympathizers. And then John Bolton, former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, will be visiting with us about Libya, the debacle that is unfolding at the moment there, and what's likely to come next. Much of that and more to come in the hours ahead. But first, some thoughts from me about the week's events. Sticking with Libya for a moment, National Journal had a remarkable characterization of the Obama administration's handling of this affair to date. It said, quote, "As it continues to tighten the noose on the Libyan strongman and consider the future of a post-Qaddafi Libya, the Obama administration will find its ability to shape events hamstrung by the same drawbacks already evident in Operation Odyssey Dawn. A barely passing acquaintance with Libyan rebels, rapidly deteriorating Arab support for continued military action, and the minimalist approach adopted by an essentially leaderless Western coalition. Even if Qaddafi departs the scene, the cumulative impact of those shortcomings could foreshadow a prolonged period of instability and violent insurgency that ultimately threatens to split Libya." Well, that sounds like a fine mess, doesn't it? And it is indeed. And what we have seen in recent days is growing evidence that the decision-making process that led up to this debacle is not much better than what we're seeing in the way of outcomes. In other words, what brought us this problem may well afflict other handlings, other vital national security decisions coming up, not least of which may well be one involving our friends in Israel, a subject we touch on with Carolyn Glick momentarily. And that is, as the Palestinians strive to achieve an independent Palestinian state through unilateral measures recognized by the international community, will the Obama administration utilize the same kind of flawed decision-making process and produce perhaps an even greater fiasco than that now afflicting us with respect to Libya, one that could embroil our friends in Israel, the region, and perhaps the wider world beyond, in a new, horrific conflagration? We'll be talking about that more in the days ahead as well, but I just wanted to share with you real concerns that the folks who brought us one problem through this defective process of deciding without strategic deliberation or consultation with the Congress, or it would seem any particular clarity about what the next step would be once the immediate tactical decision to engage in Libya and create an air cap and so on was taken. All of that could portend much, much worse to come in the future. Speaking of Israel, we've seen this week some very worrying intensified attacks against the Jewish state, not only in the form of a murderous act of barbarism against an individual family, the Fogels, which took place at the last weekend, but also a bus bombing in the heart of Jerusalem, which killed one and wounded some 30 others, and brought to mind again the kinds of horrors that we've seen in the Jewish state in the past as murderous Palestinians used terrorism for the purpose of trying, wherever possible, to inflict mass casualties for political purposes. That has all been accompanied by attacks from Gaza using missiles, rockets, and the like. Again, for the purposes of terrorizing Israelis, as well as trying to kill them wherever possible. And the question is, has our conduct, has America's signaling of a growing separation between it and the people of Israel, the government of Israel, the state of Israel, incentivized Israel's enemies to begin acting once again with violent effect to advance a political agenda that they had not been able to pursue when the United States stood strongly, unmistakably, side by side with Israel? And again, the point here is not the repeated professions of an undying commitment to Israel's security that President Obama makes quite glibly. It's rather the perception that is very much at work in the Arab world at the moment, in the Muslim world more generally, that the United States has decided to cut Israel loose. That can only bring, I believe, tremendous danger, not just to the people of Israel, but again, to the region more generally, because those sorts of perceptions tend to trigger mayhem, and it won't be confined, if it happens again, to Israel, to the Palestinian communities, or perhaps even to the Middle East. So once again, we'll be watching this space closely. Another very important issue we covered this week, and that will be, I think, of increasing concern, is what's going on south of our border. And I'm not speaking simply of the civil war that is increasingly roiling our friends in Mexico and creating pressure on our border for new and potentially serious insecurity. I'm talking about more generally what is going on in the region, which even as President Obama toured it, as the Washington Post pointed out in a quite critical editorial, with his enthusiasm about the changes that have taken place in Brazil and Chile and El Salvador, the president seemed manfully ignoring what is also happening in the region, which is the rise of chavismo, the kind of virulent anti-Americanism most closely associated with Hugo Chavez, enabled by him not only in his own native land of Venezuela, but elsewhere in the region where his proxies, his clients, his allies have come to power, often with his help through means that are illegal in some cases and simply corrupt and insidious in others. But the point is that what Hugo Chavez is doing, as we will talk about much more in the programs that follow, is fostering ties to terrorist states and organizations, including convening a summit of terrorist entities in his military intelligence headquarters in August of last year, a fact that just came to light last weekend, thanks to Roger Noriega's essay in the Washington Post. what we are facing is the clear and growing danger that our enemies in our own hemisphere are making cause with our enemies elsewhere and greatly intensifying the probability that we will face real threats coming across or perhaps under our border and perhaps involving not just terrorism, but maybe even weapons of mass destruction. Next up, we'll be getting Carolyn Glick's take from the front lines of the war for the free world in Israel. Straight ahead.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
China is a leader in the green movement? Yeah, Glenn Beck is as surprised as you.
Man has to do the things to take care of the environment. Americans are some of the best in the world on the environment. Really, China?
You're really looking at China to lead the world.
You know what our skies and our oceans will look like when China takes the lead? Which, by the way, check your watches, I think happened about last week.
Glenn Beck, weekday mornings 9 to noon on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by Carolyn Glick. She is a columnist for the Jerusalem Post, a senior fellow for the Center for Security Policy and its Middle East Affairs specialist. She is also the driving force behind a marvelous website called Latma and the author of Shackled Warrior, a woman of many parts and an extraordinary strategic analyst. And you've written a piece for your Jerusalem Post column, Carolyn, that is most extraordinary, and I wanted to visit with you urgently about it. You entitled it America's Descent into Strategic Dementia. Tell us what you think is deserves such a sharp indictment and what it might portend for both Israel and the United States.
Hi, Frank. It's always good talking to you again. Look, the basic point of the article is that the United States today, in its foreign policy, specifically regarding the Middle East, but I think the argument could be made generally, is adopting policies that without any consideration whatsoever for America's enduring foreign policy interests in the Middle East. And as a consequence, the policies that the United States has adopted over the past year or so, and particularly over the past 2 months since the Arab revolt began, are antithetical to America's national security interests. And more specifically, the policy debate that's taking place in the United States is taking place between various schools of thought that all share the one common denominator, which is that the policies that they recommend have, again, nothing to do with America's national security interests in the Middle East.
Okay, and in this regard, you've talked about the core interests of the United States as being guaranteeing the free flow of inexpensive petroleum products, the dreaded oil, as they say, we must fight those who are opposing us, the pan-Arabists and jihadists, and work with those who are friendly to us in advancing this goal. You would suggest that what we are seeing the Obama administration do, not just in Libya, but in Egypt and elsewhere in the region, is at odds with those core interests?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, take Egypt, right? Under Mubarak, Egypt had a lot of problems, and I say this as an Israeli who certainly suffered from Egypt's cold shoulder and the fact that they were the champions or the leaders of the political war against Israel, whose aim is to delegitimize Israel's right to exist. But what Mubarak did was he secured the Suez Canal in accordance to international maritime law, so that you had the free flow of goods and people through the Suez Canal in accordance with international law. And that's really stopped under the junta that's now running Egypt. They've really subordinated international law to the interests of the Muslim Brotherhood, who they are now aligning Egypt with and towards Iran, so that they allowed, in contravention of UN Security Council Resolution 1973, which prohibits Iran from exporting any weapons, they allowed two Iranian weapons ships to traverse the Suez Canal without even being inspected. And they're doing this because they're realigning their foreign policy against the United States, against the things that Mubarak secured as the dictator of Egypt. And so, too, you know, they have decided, as part of the emergence of the Muslim Brotherhood as the leader of Egypt, they've embraced Hamas, which is an illegal terrorist organization that is a Muslim Brotherhood organization that runs Gaza. And, you know, all of these things are bad. And what did the Obama administration do? Acting out of pressure from the media, from the neoconservatives, from whomever, they decided, President Obama, after a week of protests in Egypt, threw out a 30-year alliance with Mubarak and shoved him under the bus and enabled all of this to happen. So, you know, that's what the Americans did in Egypt. And in Libya, they now have opened up military operations against Muammar Gaddafi without giving a second thought to who the people are that he's actually fighting. And apparently, from the scant information that already exists about the nature of the rebels, it's fairly clear that they're more aligned with Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda than they are with the United States. So it's not clear at all what American interest is being advanced by intervening on behalf of the rebels against Muammar Gaddafi.
Yeah. Carolyn Glick is our guest. She is speaking to us from a cell phone in Israel, and we're delighted to catch you on the fly. I know, Carolyn. You dissect the groups that you mentioned just a moment ago, but just drill down with us here for a moment. Those that are driving these policy paroxysms, I guess, is one way of describing them, the strategic dementia. The anti-imperialist camp, represented by President Obama himself, and the neoconservatives, who seemingly are pushing for support for anybody who is opposed to tyranny, no matter how tyrannical they may prove to be, as you said, perhaps people associated with, if not actually representing, al-Qaeda. And as we were talking about a moment ago with Claire Lopez, the Muslim Brotherhood, which has the same goals, reestablishing the caliphate and imposing Sharia worldwide. Just tell us quickly what the implications are of each of these groups' ascendancy in the policy debate.
You mean the American groups? Or you
yes.
mean al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood?
No, I mean specifically these forces at work in American policymaking circles.
Well, basically, there are three groups that are prominent today in U.S. foreign policy debates. The first one is the anti-imperialists that Obama represents. And they think that the United States is a force for evil in the world and has to be cut down to size. It shouldn't be allowed to operate by itself. Its foreign policy has to be tethered to the U.N. And so that's really what Obama thinks. And it also means that the United States has to adopt a viciously anti-Israel foreign policy. But aside from that, the anti-imperialists really don't think that the United States has the right to intervene in the affairs of other countries. So Obama's initial instinct is always not to do anything, neither in Egypt nor in Iran, of course, or in Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Yemen. It's just leave things as they are. Let the natives deal with their problems. But to the extent that he's going to intervene, he's only going to intervene on behalf of America's enemies against America's friends, as he did in Egypt.
And that's if he gets a permission slip from the UN.
Right. If he gets the permission slip from the UN, or if domestic pressure mounts and he feels that it will be politically costly for him to stand on the sidelines, as happened in Egypt. And facing him on the other side of the ideological spectrum, such as it is, are the neoconservatives. And neoconservatives, you know, there are a lot of smart people in the neoconservative community. The problem is that they have been besotted by this idea that the job of the United States is not to secure national interests of the United States, like cheap oil and support American allies and fight America's enemies. But rather, it's to fight tyranny wherever it happens to be. So anytime that they see perceptible opposition fighting a tyrant, it doesn't matter if that tyrant is an American ally or better for the United States than the opposition is, whether they even know who the opposition is. Particularly, we've seen it in recent months with Egypt, which is just shocking, and now in Libya. They say no matter who it is, they don't care who the opposition to the tyrant is. The United States' job is to support them against the tyrant. And so, you know, this is a completely irrational policy that's really brought Egypt to the cusp of becoming an Islamic republic, you know, just months after it was the foundation of the American alliance structure in the Arab world.
Yeah, very so, quickly, Carolyn. The third force.
The third folks are the opportunists, is what I call them, and they're led by Hillary Clinton. And basically, they say whichever direction the prevailing wind is blowing, that's the direction that they're going to move American foreign policy. So with Libya, Hillary took the driver's seat in pushing America towards intervention because the French and the British wanted it, and because the media has been championing the Al-Qaeda affiliated opponents of Gaddafi as freedom fighters. So
rebels.
She took the helm.
Yeah.
The rebels.
Well, Carolyn, this is a grim forecast, needless to say. As a man often described as a neoconservative in the past, I must say I don't agree with the practice that you've just described, and I think it's really serious that we find ourselves adrift at such a moment. I know you do as well, and I have a theory that this is not going to play well with our relationship for Israel if this precedent is now practiced by some of the same folks who are pushing it here in the United States on the Gaddafi case in the future with respect to a Palestinian state, so-called self-declared. We're going to have to talk with you about that another time, though, Carolyn. Thank you so much for joining us, as always, and keep up the great work in Israel, and Godspeed. Next up, we'll be talking with Deborah Burlingame here in the United States about what is happening to the Muslim Brotherhood here, and specifically the Ground Zero Mosque. Straight ahead.
To securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Following is an important message from President Clinton and President Bush.
In January, Haiti experienced an environmental catastrophe and human tragedy of epic proportion.
But thanks in part to the generous spirit of the American people, the country of Haiti has survived. But now the people need to thrive. President Clinton and I have seen firsthand the power of your contributions at work.
The Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund is on the ground, funding programs that create jobs, teach skills, and assist local businesses.
Our fund is dedicated to supporting initiatives that encourage local entrepreneurs and help build an inclusive economy that lifts up everyone.
Help us continue this work so the people of Haiti have an opportunity to prosper.
Thank you.
To donate, go to ClintonBushHaitiFund.org or text QUAKE to 20222 to give $10. Message and data rates may apply. Brought to you by the Clinton Bush Haiti Fund and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined, I'm very pleased to say, by one of the people I admire most in America today, Deborah Burlingame, the sister of Chick Burlingame, the pilot of the flight that was hijacked on 9/11 and flown into the Pentagon with murderous effect. Ever since, Deborah has been a tremendous leader on homeland security and national security issues more generally, as a voice of the 9/11 families. And Deborah, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you for joining us here at Secure Freedom Radio.
Thank you for having me. It's always good to be with you, Frank.
The 9/11 families had a meeting with senior administration officials recently, and I gather what they were told there may not have been the full story, according to a report that Catherine Herridge, the terrific reporter at Fox News, broke yesterday. Tell us what's going on with respect to these trials of detainees at Guantanamo Bay.
Well, on March 7th, they made a big announcement, public announcement, that military commissions would be restarted. This was big news. And I was very suspicious about this because they did the same day that that announcement happened, they'd held conference calls just for 9/11 families, a separate call for U.S. Cole families, and another one for invited press. They wouldn't tell any of the people in those conference calls which military cases were going to be assigned. Catherine Herridge over at Fox has done some tremendous reporting, and yesterday she uncovered emails that went out to the uniformed defense attorneys in the 9/11 cases, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and the others, saying that those cases are not going forward. The emails were traced back from the convening authority to these attorneys, basically saying that the attorney general quote, has determined that they will be prosecuted in federal court. If at some time the Attorney General changes his decision regarding the forum, you can resubmit your request for money to go forward. In other words, they're going out and telling the public one thing. They're not going to go forward in these cases, and they are they're being completely dishonest, and they used the 9/11 families basically as cover. They lied to us, and they misled the public. And this is now a pattern with this administration.
Yeah. Deborah, let me just point a clarification. Is it your impression and understanding that the holder, double-crossed, shall we say, was narrowly confined to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and his co-conspirators in the 9/11 attacks, or does this seem to imply that they're not going forward on a number of the other cases involving Gitmo detainees as well?
This narrowly applied to the 9/11 cases. However, they would not in the press, when questioned, name which cases. There's about 48 cases that are that is generally believed and they have identified as probably going into the military forum, but they wouldn't name any of them. And so of the original five cases that were assigned back in November of 2009, none of those cases have gone forward. Let me correct myself. Three of them were plea bargained. They got sweetheart deals, and there's a worry that they're not actually going to do military commissions. They're going to use the forum simply to work out these sweetheart plea deals to empty out Guantanamo. So this is very, very underhanded. And, on the one hand, you have Congress in a bipartisan way saying, look, we don't want this, the American public doesn't want this, and we can't step on executive authority, but we do have the power of the purse. They're pushing back. And again, this is an administration who is defying the will of the people. And they have no coherent policy. They can't name a reason. And they refuse to name a reason why they're insistent on federal courts when they had the recent debacle of the Gilani case, which fell apart. He was acquitted of 284 out of 285 counts. They're calling that a victory.
They got him on one count. Yeah, and it was a near run thing on that.
One count, yeah. For conspiracy to destroy government property. This man killed 224 people. If they think that's a victory, then I think that we should be very concerned about what they're going to do with the 9/11 case.
Yeah, well, as do I, and I appreciate very much you bringing it to our attention, Deborah Burlingame. We are in an environment in which, as Carolyn Glick said in the previous segment, sort of strategic dementia seems to be setting in across a broad front, and it seems as you've just indicated in this instance that it applies to our domestic homeland security as concerns as well as foreign policy. Let me ask you, Deborah Burlingame, we visited a little bit on the margins of the hearings that Congressman Pete King convened, I guess 2 weeks ago now. You were there, you were observing them, you were, of course, deeply involved in the subject matter as a family member of people who lost their lives at the hands of folks trying to bring Sharia to its supremacy worldwide. Tell us what you made of the hearings that Congressman King held and what you think and what those in the 9/11 family community, perhaps more broadly, think should be done next by Congress in this area.
Well, I was there. I sat with three women who lost their children on 9/11, grown children, two firefighter mothers, and a woman whose 23-year-old daughter was killed in the towers. And it was a sense of unreality. I mean, here you had two men, one an African-American man who himself is leading the kind of life we want all American citizens to lead, running a business, and his son is basically targeted. He referred to the Islamists who got a hold of his son when he was in college as hunters, profile kids, and then move in on them, groom them, and basically brainwash them. He came to the hearing to basically warn his fellow Americans, and in fact, specifically at the African-American community that is being targeted. He said they profile kids with single moms. And here you had another man, Abdirazak Behi, a Somali-American who came here for the American dream along with his fellow Somalis, whose nephew, a teenager, was targeted along with 19 other kids targeted and end up at the Shabazz terrorist group in Somalia. He was killed in 2009, it was believed, when he wanted to go home. He also came to warn his fellow Americans. And these two men told shocking stories. One was the point of fact, what was happening to the youth in this country. But their response, Behe told about how he went to his mom, who was the recognized leader in his community, and he was told three things. Number one, they'll send you to Gitmo if you blow the whistle on this. Two, you'll burn in hell. And when that didn't work, he said, you and these people who are trying to stop this are a traitor to Islam. Behe said that that is the worst thing you can tell a Muslim. That's worse. That the worst thing you can tell a Muslim. He also said
it sets him up, among other things, for capital punishment as apostate.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And he also said, when questioned, that he feels that his the community has been kidnapped by the by leadership organizations that they never see. CARE, they reached out to CARE. CARE basically ignored them, and they came out and basically advised the imam.
Yeah. So this is the Council on American Islamic Relations,
exactly.
And unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation trial, and so on. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And then you had the magnificent Zudi Jasser, who stepped up. This is a guy who is a leader in his community, who embraces the Constitution and who wants to, teach Muslim immigrants, what the Constitution and liberty and freedom is all about. He basically said that this separatist mentality that is being taught in mosques is a clear danger. And all of this was on the backdrop of, the recent testimony by Janet Napolitano, head of Homeland Security, saying that, the homegrown threat has never been higher. This is the new tactic and strategy. And you had Eric Holder saying that he lies awake at night worrying about homegrown strategy. And, talk about strategic dementia. You had the Democratic side of the aisle there. I really thought that I was in a fifth dimension, because they were castigating these men. These are men of color, I might add, being castigated by the Black Caucus, it seems, scolded about the Constitution.
To say nothing of what was said about the chairman and the majority. Deborah,
yeah.
Unfortunately, we are out of time, and there's so much more to talk about. I hope we can get you back on again soon. I appreciate your insights into the challenges that we're facing and your tremendous leadership on so many different fronts. Please keep up, the terrific work you're doing, and come visit with us again very soon about it, as we're anxious to know what we can do to help you and your team.
Thanks for all you do, Frank.
Thank you. Next up, Ambassador John Bolton, former UN ambassador, will give us the lowdown straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, couldn't hurt to call. And I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager is skeptical that the changes in the Middle East will be good for the region.
There is little historic precedent for being optimistic about political developments in the Arab world.
That doesn't mean it will never be good.
It just means that based on history, there is not a lot of reason to be optimistic about anything that happens in the Arab world.
The Dennis Prager Show, weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined, I'm very pleased to say, by one of the people I admire most in America today, Deborah Burlingame, the sister of Chick Burlingame, the pilot of the flight that was hijacked on 9/11 and flown into the Pentagon with murderous effect. Ever since, Deborah has been a tremendous leader on homeland security and national security issues more generally, as a voice of the 9/11 families. And Deborah, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you for joining us here at Secure Freedom Radio.
For having me. It's always good to be with you, Frank.
The 9/11 families had a meeting with senior administration officials recently, and I gather what they were told there may not have been the full story, according to a report that Catherine Herridge, the terrific reporter at Fox News, broke yesterday. Tell us what's going on with respect to these trials of detainees at Guantanamo Bay.
Well, on March 7th, they made a big announcement, public announcement, that military commissions would be restarted. This was big news. And I was very suspicious about this because they did the same day that that announcement happened, they'd held conference calls just for 9/11 families, a separate call for U.S. Cole families, and another one for invited press. They wouldn't tell any of the people in those conference calls which military cases we were going to be assigned. Catherine Herridge over at Fox has done some tremendous reporting, and yesterday she uncovered emails that went out to the uniformed defense attorneys in the 9/11 cases, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and the others, saying that those cases are not going forward. The emails were traced back from the convening authority to these attorneys, basically saying that the attorney general
quote, has determined that they will be prosecuted in federal court. If at some time the Attorney General changes his decision regarding the form, you can resubmit your request for money to go forward. In other words, they're going out and telling the public one thing. They're not going to go forward in these cases, and they are they're being completely dishonest, and they used the 9/11 families basically as cover. They lied to us, and they misled the public. And this is now a pattern with this administration.
Yeah. Deborah, let me just point a clarification. Is it your impression and understanding that the holder, double cross, shall we say, was narrowly confined to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and his co-conspirators in the 9/11 attacks, or does this seem to imply that they're not going forward on a number of the other cases involving Gitmo detainees as well?
This narrowly applied to the 9/11 cases. However, they would not in the press, when questioned, name which cases. There's about 48 cases that are that is generally believed and they have identified as probably going into the military forum, but they wouldn't name any of them. And so of the original five cases that were assigned back in November of 2009, none of those cases have gone forward. Let me correct myself. Three of them were plea bargained. They got sweetheart deals, and there's a worry that they're not actually going to do military commissions. They're going to use the forum simply to work out these sweetheart plea deals to empty out Guantanamo. So this is very, very underhanded. And, on the one hand, you have Congress in a bipartisan way saying, look, we don't want this, the American public doesn't want this, and we can't step on executive authority, but we do have the power of the purse. They're pushing back. And again, this is an administration who is defying the will of the people. And they have no coherent policy. They have they can't name a reason. And they refuse to name a reason why they're insistent on federal courts when they had the recent debacle of the Galani case, which fell apart. He was acquitted of 284 out of 285 counts. They're calling that a victory.
They got him on one count. Yeah, and it was a near run thing
on
that.
One count, yeah. For conspiracy to destroy government property. This man killed 224 people. If they think that's a victory, then I think that we should be very concerned about what they're going to do with the 9/11 case.
Yeah, well, as do I, and I appreciate very much you bringing it to our attention, Deborah Burlingame. We are in an environment in which, as Carolyn Glick said in the previous segment, sort of strategic dementia seems to be setting in across a broad front, and it seems as you've just indicated in this instance that it applies to our domestic homeland security as concerns as well as foreign policy. Let me ask you, Deborah Burlingame, we visited a little bit on the margins of the hearings that Congressman Pete King convened, I guess 2 weeks ago now. You were there, you were observing them, you were of course deeply involved in the subject matter as a family member of people who lost their lives at the hands of folks trying to bring Sharia to its supremacy worldwide. Tell us what you made of the hearings that Congressman King held and what you think and what those in the 9/11 family community, perhaps more broadly, think should be done next by Congress in this area.
Well, I was there. I sat with three women who lost their children on 9/11, grown children, two firefighter mothers, and a woman whose 23-year-old daughter was killed in the towers. And it was a sense of unreality. I mean, here you had two men, one an African-American man who himself is leading the kind of life we want all American citizens to lead, running a business, and his son is basically targeted. He referred to the Islamists who got a hold of his son when he was in college as hunters, profile kids, and then move in on them, groom them, and basically brainwash them. He came to the hearing to basically warn his fellow Americans, and in fact, specifically at the African-American community that is being targeted. He said they profile kids with single moms. Here you had another man, Abdirazak Behi, a Somali-American who came here for the American dream along with his fellow Somalis, whose nephew, a teenager, was targeted along with 19 other kids targeted and end up at the Shabazz terrorist group in Somalia. He was killed in 2009, was believed, when he wanted to go home. He also came to warn his fellow Americans. And these two men told shocking stories. One was the point of fact, what was happening to the youth in this country. But the response, Behe told about how he went to his mom, who was the recognized leader in his community, and he was told three things. Number one, they'll send you to Gitmo if you blow the whistle on this. Two, you'll burn in hell. And when that didn't work, he said, you and these people who are trying to stop this are a traitor to Islam. Behe said that is the worst thing you can tell a Muslim. That's worse. That the worst thing you can tell a Muslim. He also said,
well,
that
it sets him up, among other things, for capital punishment as apostate.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And he also said, when questioned, that he feels that his the community has been kidnapped by the by leadership organizations that they never see. CARE, they reached out to CARE. CARE basically ignored them, and they came out and basically advised the imam.
Yeah. So this is the Council on American-Islamic Relations,
exactly.
And unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation trial and so on. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And then you had the magnificent Zudi Jasser, who stepped up. This is a guy who is a leader in his community, who embraces the Constitution and who wants to, teach Muslim immigrants, what the Constitution and liberty and freedom is all about. He basically said that this separatist mentality that is being taught in mosque is a clear danger. And all of this was on the backdrop of, the recent testimony by Janet Napolitano, head of Homeland Security, saying that, the homegrown threat has never been higher. This is the new tactic and strategy. And you had Eric Holder saying that he lies awake at night worrying about homegrown strategy. And, talk about strategic dementia. You had the Democratic side of the aisle there. I really thought that I was in a fifth dimension, because they were castigating these men. These are men of color, I might add, being castigated by the black caucus, it seems, scolded about the Constitution.
To say nothing of what was said about the chairman and the majority. Deborah,
yeah.
Unfortunately, we are out of time, and there's so much more to talk about. I hope we can get you back on again soon. I appreciate your insights into the challenges that we're facing and your tremendous leadership on so many different fronts. Please keep up, the terrific work you're doing, and come visit with us again very soon about it, as we're anxious to know what we can do to help you and your team.
Thanks for all you do, Frank.
Thank you. Next up, Ambassador John Bolton, former UN ambassador, will give us the lowdown straight ahead.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.